honestly, it's straight up, because he has the same. He's got the scars on his on his chest and like dealt with, like, oh my God, it very is. That is really funny. I was like, serial killer or is he a dirty dom daddy? I don't know. I'm willing to find out.
Yeah, hey man.
Oh my God, our lives. Okay.
Welcome to Horror Movie Survival Guide, Disco Citizens, the podcast where gorehounds
and best friends, Terry Gamble
and Julia Marchesi, break down a different horror movie each week,
exploring a multitude of genres, subgenres,
and sub-subgenres,
classic and cult,
international
and underground flicks alike, determining which films are the goriest,
and offering up Horror Movie Survival Guide tips
to help you stay alive.
Disco Citizens, I hope you are ready for this round of gore coming your way, because we're going to start hard. Terry, are you ready?
No. Yes. I just forgot how gory this was till I just pulled up the IMDb right now in front of me, Julia, and the poster alone, I was like, oh God, oh God.
Yes. This is Horror Movie Survival Guide. I am Julia. This week we are talking about 1980s Maniac. The title for this episode is Pretty for Me. The tagline for this movie is, I warned you not to go out tonight. Okay. It's fine. So this was written by C.A.
But the way they have it on the poster, because they have it above Maniac, and like it's right below this dude's like holding a knife and he's got a bulgy crotch.
See, okay, like, I was just thinking of the poster too, and I was like, okay, is that like his lunch box, or is it just I thought it was the reflection of the knife on his jeans? Not that jeans are very reflective. Anyway, this movie was written by C.A. Rosenberg and Joe
Spinell.
It looks
like he's very excited to kill. That's what it looks like. Yes. And like, too excited.
C.A. Rosenberg and Joe Spinell, who also stars as Frank Zito and directed by William Lustig. So this is actually surprisingly, I think this will surprise you, Terry, how high on my movie list this movie is. It is really high on my horror movie list. Like when I think, and I think I've waited a long time to do it because I feel like it goes so hard. I was like, I don't know how Terry will feel about this because Hellraiser's one, wait, hear me out. Because Hellraiser's one thing where it's this kind of fantastical beauty kind of thing, right? And this is not that. This is 1980 New York at its grimiest, sleaziest, most disgusting. And you have the most, Joe Spinell, I think, is brilliant. This script is brilliant. I think his performance is incredible. And he is, for me, one of the most terrifying serial killers on screen, and because he feels the most real. I'm like, yeah, that guy. I see that guy. And I'm like, yeah, it's him. So to be able to do that with the performance that he gives in this, knowing how fucking fucked up this movie is as well, I love it. You know I love me grimy New York. This is like grimy New York in a little capsule, and I love it very much.
I love how fucking excited you are, and I did not know that this was that for you. I knew you've been wanting to do it for a minute. I was like, yeah, it's been on our radar for a while, but then I'm glad you finally threw it on here. And when I watched it, I was like, yeah, this is a Julia movie, because then mostly because of the New York, because I know you have a certain time period that you want to travel back and just be like, you know, go to like the triple X, you know, shows, you know, off of Times Square when Times Square was not about Disney.
So talking to film fans is actually a very popular time that film fans want to travel to, even though it looks terrible and miserable. Like, it's still, there's like this weird draw to it. So
but for something me, about, I feel like it's why people love, sorry, love records. It's got that analog vibe to it. It feels real. It doesn't feel like fabricated. You don't see CGI like we have now. Right. It just feels like authentic in a way that film does not have the same quality like it does from this era. But yes.
Yeah, it has almost that kind of Texas Chainsaw Massacre feel where it feels real. Like you're watching this really happen. It's not just a film. But when I think about serial killers on screen, and this is because this does a serial killer in a different way, in the fact that it's really about him, right? Like you feel like a lot of serial killer stories are about the victims. Like this is really about the killer and his problems. And one of the few movies I can think of where you get an inner monologue from the killer, which you almost never do. And I loved it. I'm like, yes, give it to me. Like you're giving me this distorted vision of like how he sees the world. So it's kind of like if you took Taxi Driver and you took Travis Bickle, but you like his all inner monologue, right? But this is kind of you take him into a serial killer mode and like figure out what the trauma is through that. I love it.
Yeah, it's a little like Mindhunter in the mind of, you know, through the mind of the killer kind of thing too. And I think it's interesting that this is one of your favorites too, because I know you were not a big true crime head, but this feels like more true crime-ish than some of the other stuff they're into. Yeah, kind of vibe.
Yeah, it's true. But sometimes serial killer stuff is hits right because it's just done in the sleazy way that I need it to be done. So we start
it's interesting
out with
too. Sorry, I'm just looking at Joe Spinell's stuff. He did Shakespeare and has a background in, like, you know, being on, like, you know, Joe Papp's, like, public, you know, in the Shakespeare Festival and stuff like that when he was younger, and a Broadway actor. So he has the chops. So I think that's also what sets it apart. You have like a guy who's like that type of an actor who's writing and directing this. He's coming at it from a different, I think, mindset and really mining it. And I think that's why we get some of that, those pieces where it's like more like a Hamlet soliloquy, you know, or something like that.
Sure.
Vibe, which I think we both really vibe on too.
Agreed. And so you're getting this kind of Shakespearean level performance mixed with Bill Lustig's direction, which was in a sleazy kind of pornographic kind of way. And you mix those things together and you get this. So we end up beginning. We don't end. We begin on a couple snoozing on a beach, and she asks him to go leave to get some firewood, which he begrudgingly does. And
well, first she says, "I'm ready to go. It's cold." And he coerces her and says, no, baby. It's not too bad. I'm tired. Let's just rest right here." And she's like, no, baby. The vibes are not right now. We should get going. But he's like, "I'll just get some firewood and leave you the fuck alone while the vibes are not right." I feel like this happened last week where the girl was like Jacques and Nora. And she was like, "Honey, I don't need you to leave me right now. Things are not good right now." And the guy was like, no, it's fine. It's all in your head, girl. I was like, oh, gaslit from the beginning. Oh, no.
So he leaves to go get driftwood. And Frank Zito, our man, was watching the whole time and comes up and slits her throat. We haven't mentioned, by the way, that fucking Tom Savini did the effects for this movie. So, you know, they are chef's kiss, gorgeous, 10 out of 10, no notes, beauty.
He was in this one too. Yes.
He's disco boy in this, which he's amazing at. But even Tom Savini has said that he feels sometimes like he went too far on this movie. That this was like not, and I was like, no, you went just right, sir.
Real because he knows and he's seen horrors. And so, yeah, he kills this one. And wow.
Like, though, there's a moment because around the beach that as she's screaming, her screams make the seagulls start to scream. And there's that kind of artistic, beautiful moment in the beauty, in the horror of it. And then comes the man comes back, garrots the man. And there we are. And he wakes up screaming.
Yeah, and then that's the intro. That's your mouche bouche. I was like, oh, this is the beginning of the movie. I was like, this movie about to be fucked up, and I can't wait. And so we cut to, you know, this man, Frank Zito, the killer. I'm looking at his scars and body in the mirror, and he's got these weird old dolls in a room. And I was like, oh, he's got a creepy doll room. And then there's like these weird masks in there. I was like, oh, he's giving me psycho / Texas Chainsaw vibes all day.
Yeah.
And then we look and he's like, you know, then we cut to CD Times Square, Julia's favorite. And there's a negotiation with the guy with the hooker. $25, $50, $75, $100. I'll take you around the world, baby. Then all of a sudden you're getting all these taxes on for the room. And he's taking this girl up to the room. And she's wearing these little American Apparel style little shorts. Little like disco shorts that are gorgeous, these little lavender shorts that I love. And she's posing in her little fishnets with these little seams. And you know, it's about to be all bad for that hooker.
It is. And like, this is the costuming in this movie. Fantastic. This outfit in particular is spot on. And you know, the sad thing about that is you're getting time with these women individually, because some of the kills later is just kind of like they're running and screaming from him, but this is, they're having an interaction. And at first it looks like it might be okay. Like maybe he really does just want her to pose for him because he's got like a doll fetish thing, but then it doesn't go okay. And so he starts to strangle her. She seems so sweet and she's really trying to like bring him out of his shell. And he strangles her really bad. And the POV shot of him above her, strangling her with the sweaty, fucking horrible face is like, this is serial killer, like in a one shot Like, this is what it is.
Yes and no, because strangely, it was that weird dichotomy, though, of like, because she's in this hotel that's specifically for sex workers, and he's strangling her, the sounds that she's making and he's making sound like they're having really intense, rough sex. And it doesn't look like necessarily that he's killing her for a hot second. You could flip and be like, they're just having really intense orgasms together. And it looks like he's actually orgasming based on this murder. And that's the thing that's so distressing. I think in that moment, she yells to him to stop it while she's strangling, and eventually she can't. And then he vomits right after. Like, it's just like he's disgusted with himself. Like, he can't believe he did it. But also, like, you can tell it's a compulsion that he had to do it. Like, yeah. Also from his point of view.
Yeah, because he sees his mother's face on her while he's strangling her, and he says immediately he says, "Mommy, I didn't want to do it." So then he ends up scalping her. So his thing as a serial killer, his gimmick, if you will, gotta get a gimmick, is little gypsy. His gimmick is that he has mannequins that he scalps the girls, takes their clothes, and then dresses these mannequins up as these women, and then talks to them as if they were those women and sleeps with them.
It's how he preserves them.
He's keeping them forever.
This is his preservation society. He's like, how can I inhabit and keep these women forever? This is how.
He has a sweet murder kit that he keeps in a violin case that they show us. You're like, oh, this is brutal. He's like tools of the trade. Anything he needs in the moment. You got your knives. You got your guns. You got what you need. No problem. I love.
It's like those old Tommy guns, like, you know, back in the day, right? Like old villain. Ha, you see, I got my gun here. Hey.
But the great thing about this shot of him assembling his murder kit is that he's also eating Cracker Jacks at the same time. So you have this, and I'm like, oh, they have a sense of humor in this movie. Oh, they understand how stupid this is. This is amazing.
Well, not just that. I think it really shows the arrested development of this gentleman. Like, you can see, like, he's already, you know, he's got the dolls and he's got these kids' snacks. Like, it's this dichotomy.
You're never too old for Cracker Jacks.
I didn't say you were, but it's definitely a thing that was like a treat when you're a child that I feel like you continue to have as a treat when you're an adult because it was a treat you had as a child. True. You know, and it's one of those things that's like, you know, it's got a prize inside and all that kind of stuff too. So it's like, you know, this is what it is. So, yeah.
Also in the back of that shot is a Star Wars glass with Han Solo and Chewbacca on it. And I was like, okay, who would have thought there was a Star Wars maniac connection? But there is.
You found it. Yeah, found it. I'm sure there's more. I'm sure there's more. Yeah.
The details. This is what we're into.
So the next scene, he's in front of Club Blossoms, which just looks like the seediest, funnest club. And I wish we could go there, Julia. That would be a place I would like to go with you. Yes. It looks like hot trash. And I love hot trash and like a lot of fun. And there's this guy. Oh, Tom Savini. Wait, what? Disco boy making out in a car with this hot girl. Sounds like she already has a boyfriend, though. So they're kind of like tipping out on the side. But hey, you know, live your life. I love it. You know, poly life, whatever. Do your thing.
Yeah, poly life for sure. But like once you've gotten into his car, the deal's kind of sealed, right? Like you don't get into the car if you don't want to.
Unless she's like, I think my boyfriend might be outside. But she's also not wrong because the vibes are weird. There is somebody outside watching. Mm-hmm. It's not her boyfriend, but it is our dear friend Frank Zito watching them make out. Tom doesn't believe her and he gets out of the car. He's like, look, there's nobody here because he's led by his dick. And he's trying to get it in. Uh-huh. And, you know, his brushing off the danger gets him his head blown off.
Whoa. This shot, incredible. The shot of Frank jumping onto the hood in slow motion, aiming the shotgun at the windshield, and then the gloriousness. They really revel in it, the gloriousness of this head explosion. Everyone says Scanners has the best head explosions.
This
but
one's
I
better.
I think this one's better.
This one is better. I wholeheartedly agree. Honestly, I was like, whoa. I was not expecting how it happened when it happened because I did not know. And B, I think it's much better, but I just think Scanners, I think it's just because it was just like the head on, whatever. But it's just, right. Woo. The carnage from this is gorgeous.
Amazing.
Wow. And Tom Savini, what the fuck? You're a creepy genius and I love you.
I love him too. I like that he got to blow his own head off. That makes me really happy.
It's pretty cool. I mean, I just remember seeing him at Midsummer Scream last summer. I did not get to sign up at his booth because I was running around just trying to get something else. But I gave him a big, like, arms up, like, palm up. And now he's like, hey, yeah, yeah. We just give each other a little respect. And I just love him so much. And he's just such a cutie. And I love you, Tom Savini. If you ever come on our show, we would love to talk with you. We should.
Yeah, that's goals.
I would love. Yeah, we should. Yeah, we'll ask some friends. Let's ask our mutual friends.
Anything happens. Yeah. So we do get a fourth wall break in this movie during one of Zito's monologues. So it's this kind of back and forth where he's talking to himself. So you're getting his inner monologue and his outer monologue at the same time. And he's talking to his new mannequin that he has handcuffed himself to and is talking about that they are mine now. And he's so happy. Then he goes to the park. He has a small interaction with a kid who almost runs into him on a bike. And Carolyn Monroe as Anna D'Antoni is there taking pictures as a photographer. If you want to look up the word luminous in the dictionary, Carolyn Monroe would be the picture that you would see because good God. And the fact that she's in this movie is mind blowing because like she's in this movie, A, B, she's into Frank. What the fuck? Creepy uncle. Creepy uncle. I was
like, yeah. Do we need to explain this to you of all people? I feel like you should understand what is happening in this moment. Okay. Right. So there's a thing that happens being a hot girl. You know, you understand. I understand. Sometimes when you're a hot girl, people think you're unapproachable.
True.
And so when a guy is brave enough, it does not matter necessarily how hot he is. Sometimes it's just the fact that he has the balls to be like, hey, you, me, let's get dinner. And you're like, yeah, okay. Like, you've got confidence. I want to see it. Like, I want to see what's going on. Like, you probably can fuck really real good. I realize my boss listens to some of these episodes, so I don't know, whatever. But, you know. But you know what I mean, though? Like, it's like there is that thing like where he comes up with like BDE. Like there is, I swear to God, every now and again, you're just like, no, you got the confidence that you're going to like, we're going to have a good time. And I feel like I'm curious and I would love to know. Sometimes I may end up, going the wrong path someday. But, you know, I've taken my chances on some crazy ass shit and I've been pleasantly happy, you know?
But this is the thing is that we have the show about how to survive horror movies. And yet...
we are the worst.
We are the worst because cute boy killers are my downfall. Creepy uncle killers are your downfall. And like, it's terrible. We'll be so dead. I'm sorry, listeners. Maybe we have not been doing our justice.
I think this is why we do the show, though. We're just like hopeful maybe we'll figure it out and stop making bad choices. But we're just as bad as some of these people in these movies. And also right before this scene, we also had a news report where they're like five dead. And like, you know, they're doing the news thing right before too. So obviously horror movie, always listen to the news, right? That's a tip. Survival guide, just, you know, make sure you're up on what the heck is happening out there.
But I have to say, like I mentioned in lots of our episodes, the cop characters, because in Leton we talked about last week, the like useless cop characters subplot, I'm like, I don't care about that. Like really, if you just had it be about Zito entirely and taken the cops out of it, I would have been happier. They always feel so superfluous to me in these kind of movies. Like it feels like this movie to me feels really unique and like is a very distinctive vision, and the cop things feel so rote and like play by play that it bothers me.
I'm not as bothered just because I feel like they're always just impotent, which I love. Which is
true.
Different than watching like procedurals or something like that, where they try to make them like the ever constant hero. We see, you know, after he meets up with this girl and he basically is like, okay, he sees her address on the camera bag and basically is able to follow her. So you guys, I'm just going to give you, that's another survival guide tip that I actually follow in my life. Make sure if you have your address on your luggage or bag, like flip it over, don't have it on the front. So if your bag does get lost somehow and you're departed from it, but not so it's your address is out there easy for everyone to see at all times, flip it. Okay. Flip the card around. And then put, if you have a PO box or something better, do that too. So anyway, there's some nurses walking out, talking about the killer and dealing with their patients. And like, ooh, girl, oh, do you need me to drive you home? And the other girl's like, no, I'm good. My ride's about to be here. I'm like, girl, there is a killer on the loose. You literally work in a hospital. You've seen all these people coming in and you're going to just hang out there by yourself. A bad, big mistake.
Great thing about nurses in horror movies, though, is that they wear all white. So, you know, it's really going to be good, you know?
Body count.
Yes. So there's a couple of movies. If you ask me, of movies to think of that take place in subways, or like when I think of like subways in movies, Warriors right up there.
Pelham 123.
Pelham 123, of course, Subway, Besson Subway, and this movie. I always think of this scene of them in the subway, and I feel like it's not necessarily my favorite kill in the movie, and yet for some reason it resonates.
It's pretty good. So he follows her down, you know, into the subway, and all of a sudden she's like, you know, this is that thing where you're trying to, you know, not have somebody follow you on public transit, which is actually really kind of scary, because I think this is something that really does happen. I feel like, I know I've definitely ridden an extra stop or gotten off an earlier stop before riding, you know, public transit before. If there's somebody nefarious on your train or feels uncomfortable or feels weird or like they're going to follow you someplace, so you want to throw them off a little bit.
Why can't people just be nice, man? It's so easy.
Sometimes people are nice, but sometimes people feel entitled to other people. You know, there is that, you know, in the ether. And I feel like it's only stranger now with the parasocial aspect where people feel like they already kind of know you, even though they don't know you.
Of course.
Anyway, she walks out slowly. She wonders if he's going to be waiting outside. She ends up finding her way into this like subway bathroom, basically, which just looks awful. And so she's kind of holding her breath and hoping he hasn't followed her in there. And she takes a moment of respite and washes her face in the sink. And while she's got her face down in the sink, I was like, oh, girl, you can't let your foot off the gas right now. This is not the time.
I mean, this is me in this situation. I would stay in that stall all night. I would not move. I would not go out anywhere. Wait
till the next day. Yeah.
Yeah. Just until people come in. Like, I'm not going anywhere. So she ends up washing her face and then stands up and gets to see herself impaled through from front to back in the mirror. Really terrible. Great job, Tom Savini. So
Lug soap nurse's uniform as we love. And he takes that outfit and takes that back to his beautiful mannequin and says, oh, you're pretty for me. Title of episode. Yay.
Yes. And he's wearing a crazy ascot cat eye glasses combination, which I really enjoy. So we talked about a lot of movies that have been kind of based on Ed Gein, this being one of them, Texas Chainsaw, of course, and Psycho and Silence of the Lambs. And this is a kind of an interesting take on it in that you're hearing so much of both his mother's voice, but also his own voice as a child is also thrown in there, is this extra kind of thing, and getting to hear everything that's going on in his head and how chaotic it would be to continue to hear these voices gives you an ounce of sympathy for him, right? Like, there is this kind of aspect where he does feel tortured and he doesn't want to do it and he can't stop himself.
Yeah, he needs help. He definitely needs help. And he's, you know, he's lucid enough to know that what he's doing is wrong, but not enough to get help for what he's doing and feeling like he's super compelled. So he ends up showing up at his photographer friend's house and she is wearing these red leather pants when he comes in. And I'm like, ooh, girl, tell me
her
more.
Hair, that like cute little face. I mean, it's. And so she invites him right in and they have asked her out on a date immediately. And she's like, yeah, OK, sure. Let's go. Gets no creepy vibes from him. And they have a nice dinner.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, he's charming and like actually like seems to be able to hold a conversation, which is just like pleasantly surprising. And they talk about art and kind of like, you know, why she likes taking pictures. And she, you know, they both kind of talk about painting versus photography and how you can preserve an image. And isn't that image like kind of capturing the essence of that person and preserving that? And they have some differences of opinion. You can feel a little bit about preservation because as we already know, Frank has got his own preservation system.
He does. But then he gets to sit in the next day on her model photographer shoot, which brought up the question for me in this scene. Like, she's also into ladies though, right? Cause like the way that she was interacting with some of those models. And like, then she was talking about the beautiful pictures on the walls of the ladies and why she's like, the women are so beautiful. And in that photography scene, I was like, huh, interesting. She's wearing these black satin pants that must be called out. And he shows up so awkward in this suit, this groovy 70s suit, looking so uncomfortable, bringing her a teddy bear, which is pretty fucking cute.
It
is
really
cute. And then he sits
cute.
There on the couch with the teddy bear holding it, you know, like that. So incongruous. It looks so fucked up.
And it just shows like that weird arrested development again of like his like kind of childhood childlike like energy, as well as like obviously being a brutal killer, which is just like dichotomy. So like this, that's why you would trust him though, because he just seems like, oh, like he's just like, he's a nice guy. He seems like a nice guy. And then like
he's there's just got some problems, but how bad can those problems be?
Oh, bad. But also yeah. sitting next to like this D-bag of a guy who's like her like kind of like editor or something like that, who's hanging out there too, who's like, oh, who's this guy? Well, like, you need to get to work. We're paying $100 an hour, you know, for these models. I was like, oh, hot damn, these models are making some bank. 1980, $100. And Frank is sitting at the back though, and even though he seems kind of innocent, he's also moaning a little bit while he's watching her do this photo shoot. So it seems like maybe he's getting a little horn town while this is going on right in front of them, and not quite about it.
So he takes his opportunity to steal the necklace of Rita, who is one of the models who they asked her to take the necklace off, and follows her home. So horror movie survival guide tip, a lot of them in this episode, one of them is always lock your door, because she walks in and just breezes on in, and it just, it makes me itch. It's like when someone says Nevada and I have the immediate knee-jerk reaction. I say Nevada.
I love going like, to Nevada though. It's like Nevada. So cute.
I can't.
I love it.
It
so much.
It makes me crazy.
Nevada so road trips are one of my favorite.
Jesus, it really makes me itchy inside. It makes me feel so
uncomfortable. I can see your eyes. I'm so sorry.
You ask anybody from Nevada, and they will do it immediately. Like, you can't stop it. It's amazing. But this kind of thing too, when I see somebody, or like someone in a movie who doesn't wash their hands after they go to the bathroom, and you're like, no, please stop. Oh my God. Like, it's just something that always.
That's why we don't shake men's hands.
Yeah, we do get some tits. We do get some tits as she's going to take a bath, of course. But then our friend
horror boobs. Yeah, I have that in my notes. Thank you. Horror shout boobs. Out horror boobs.
I mean, production value, right? We got to get some bath time in there, of course. So he then shows up, and she says, "Hey, I have your necklace." And she's like, "Okay." And he does this very subtle unlocking her door, where she doesn't notice. So she closes it. She thinks it's locked. It's not locked. She does have a top bolt, which she does not bolt. Bolt all the bolts. Why not?
And she just is all relaxed. She just took that bath, and now she's making tea. And of course, while she's making tea, she's going to get attacked.
This one he ties up, and so she's there and gagged. And this was interesting, because this scene, I can't tell who he's talking to.
Why do you do these things? That one?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, is he talking to her? Is he talking to himself? Is he talking to his mother?
Who he is talks he in the to? Mirror as well, too. So he's like in the mirror, and as he has her gagged, and like it is a strange one. Yeah,
it's just that whole monologue doesn't let you know who he's talking to. It could be anybody, and I think that's really fascinating. So we really do get this is where he really is becoming like mommy. What mommy? Like he killed
so many men. So many men. Then you realize, oh, mom might have been a hooker too, or just had a lot of boyfriends, or something was going on with mom.
And they're getting a lot of punishment, locked in a closet. So we're getting his backstory through these kind of moments.
And the knife play and the switchblade that he has and stuff like that. So it's like, oh, this is not new for him. Like right. He's dealt with abuse when he was a child as well, too, because we saw a bunch of his scars at the very beginning of the movie as well. You're like, oh, he was very abused as a child as well.
This is, I hate to say this, but this is Christian Grey vibes. I'm sorry.
Honestly? It's straight up, because he has the same. He's got the scars on his on his chest, and like dealt with, like, oh my God, it very is. That is really funny. I was like, serial killer, or is he a dirty dom daddy? I don't know. I'm willing to find out.
Yeah, hey man.
Oh my God, our lives. Okay. Yes. It could pay off. It could pay off. So okay.
He stabs her in the chest with a switchblade after telling her that he doesn't want to hurt her. Brings
and
her
lies on top of her
back.
Too. Yeah.
Saying mommy and like squishing the blood out of her. It's really gross. Mm-hmm. So then he calls up Anna for a date. This is also calls Anna for a date, and she's like instantly like, yep, okay, give me 10 minutes. I'm good. I can't.
If that'll be there in 15 minutes. Well, this is different time, remember, because this is pre-cell phone, baby. So it's
I understand that. But I would say, unless I was very, very, very into a boy, if he was just, if I'm in the middle of something and he's like, I'll be there in 10 minutes, like I would panic. I would just be like, I'm not ready for that. She's like, no, it's great. Let's go. Let's go for this dinner. This very awkward dinner. He just looks out of place everywhere he goes. And I think that's part of the point of this film.
Yeah. But he also says she's going to take her to a show. He's like, oh, you want to go to this Broadway show or something like that? It's not even like dinner or whatever. She's like, oh, yeah, I'd love to go to a show. I probably would do that. Like, so if someone called me and wanted to go to a movie, I don't know. Anyway.
But she doesn't even ask what show. He's like, go to a show. She's like, okay. Okay. So, but this is creepy uncle. I know you're into it, but this is where you know about, right? Where he's like, hey, can we stop by my mother's grave to put flowers on my mother's grave today before we go to dinner and a show?
He wants to put a wreath twice. It's for Christmas.
I understand.
One, it's a wreath, right?
I would say, can you please? I don't feel comfortable with that. Like, that is not something I'm willing to do with someone on the third date. It's go to your mother's grave. That's too far, too much. No, a big no. A no.
And she also, it wasn't just the date. Hold on, because he says, oh, thank you so much for coming to my friend's funeral. He went to Rita's funeral. And they hung out around that too. So she's like, oh, that was so nice of you. Like, he was there for her during this hard time as well. So it's more than just that. So, you know, she just dealt with a loss. So I think he's trying to be like, I have a loss too. Do you know what I mean, though? It's that thing, not just like, oh, we're about to go on this date. It was like, we've both already commiserated over misery and sadness and grief. We're connected by that as well now. And so she's like, oh, yes, I'm very understanding. You were there for me and my grief for my friend. Now I'll be there for you and your commemoration because it's the holidays. And I know that's going to be hard for you coming up with your mom. I think it's different than that. I know you're saying no. That's because you're horror movie survival guiding. You've seen this movie a long time ago, but I was like, I get why she would go though. I think it doesn't make full. I don't think it's full bull roar after he's already gone to the funeral. So she's at mom's grave, and you know he's doing a Hail Mary, and he's talking about how his head hurts and like it's just a problem, and all of a sudden this is not going to go well at this gravesite, kids.
Nope, he's going to start to strangle her, and then we're going to get a big chase scene through the cemetery. The mist in this scene gave me vibes of Litton from last week, where it was just misty mist. It was very beautiful mist through the cemetery. It looked like it was a very difficult cemetery to run through. It's not just straight, flat land. So it's quite a good chase. She does find a shovel, which she hits him in the arm with once, and then runs away. As we know, horror movies, just keep hitting them until
fucking double tap.
Yes.
She did not fucking double tap. And I was like, oh no. And then he's yelling.
You don't have to go as hard as killing them, but you do have to go as hard as knock them out.
Yeah. Hard. You got to knock them out. You probably need to give him a little TBI, something.
TBI.
Dramatic brain injury, like something. You got to knock him out. Like, you got to do something to this guy.
A concussion, at least, for sure.
You know, that's a TBI as well.
Oh, okay.
So mother, he's like yelling and hearing her voice, and he's like, mommy has to punish you. And he's hearing all this stuff swirling around him because he's just been at his mother's grave, and he's crying at her grave, and all of a sudden, zombie mom.
Yeah, we get a good corpse zombie corpse coming in to grab him, and he starts to scream, but it's just a hallucination. Then we see he sees his mom in bed beckoning at him, and he sees
when he runs home. Yeah,
all the women that he killed all of a sudden come to life, and they're
the mannequins like reanimate basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so they come for him. This scene amazing. All of the women that he killed come and kill him and dismember him and rip his head off.
They tear him limb from limb and quarter him.
Thank God for you, Tom Savini. It's delightful. And then the cops, which thankfully we didn't have to see too much of in this film, arrive and find him that he is dead, but he had stabbed himself in the stomach. So we see him laying there dead in his pool of his blood. And then we have eyes open, fake out. And then
is he still alive? Maniac. What a film, Julia. Holy fucking shit.
You know what else I love? A downbeat ending. I also love a downbeat ending. And I'm like, yay, everybody's dead. Woohoo.
But also the killer. So that was like, or maybe, hopefully, you know, is you know, maybe it wasn't all a hallucination.
Electric Boogaloo.
Oh, the Jesus. Musical. No. Oh.
Every movie's better with a dance number. No.
Did this have one?
There was some, I mean, they were at a disco, but I don't think we saw it inside.
No, we didn't actually really see inside. It was just the kids getting it on in the car outside, Tom Savini and the lady outside. Julia, this movie is insane. I loved it.
Yes. So we probably don't need to do a gore factor, but we're going
for this
to do
gore,
a gore
round
factor.
Of all these yes. gory movies we're covering this month.
I mean, and this is the thing is like you and I love gore so much, and we've never done a round focus entirely on that.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited to do it. And really the artistry of it is, you know, you've heard us praise Tom Savini this entire episode. So we love
so
him.
Give us love all you, the Tom gore. Savini. You could still get it. Just call me. Oh, yeah. Call me. I'm right here. Anyway, really gore factor. Yeah.
One, not enough to fill a Dixie cup. Two is a puddle of blood. Three is enough blood to gross out the average viewer. Four is a bathtub of love. And five is run for the barf bag. Yeah, it's a five.
Yeah. There's a good amount of blood, scalps, all the killings for your gory needs. Movie ratings, chainsaws, one if you're desperate, two barely qualifies as a horror film, three seen worse, seen better, four not too shabby, five Fantastic Girl. This is a five for me. This movie's wow.
Tell me your thoughts.
Five. I thought it was fantastic. I thought I really love Joe Spinell. I would go out with him with a haircut. I think he's, you know, seems so sweet, and it's so fucked up and so beautiful. And like how I talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm. Please.
How do I what?
How do you survive?
Well, lock your doors and probably don't go out on a date with him, but I probably wouldn't. I probably would. I don't know. I would be that person. I'd probably go out with him.
As we've mentioned before, horror movie survival guide tips are delightful, but also quite hem in your life, because really the answer is to never go out anywhere, and that's how you survive, which ultimately is the answer. But if you want to go out and have a life, you're kind of risking it at any time, any place.
It's always a risk going outside.
But it's normally usually worth it. I also give this movie a five. Ding, ding, ding. So we have an all-around five.
Ding, ding, ding. All around five.
Always love. So surprisingly, I have not seen the remake of this movie with Elijah Wood, which I can't even fathom.
My the love brain, of your life?
Yes. I cannot even think of him being in a movie this hard. And I hope it goes that hard. So we will definitely
cover like
that.
I feel like he could. I feel like after like Come to Daddy and like I don't feel at home in this world anymore and like all of that stuff, I feel like he could go hard. He can go hard. I mean, I believe
Maniac,
it.
A Maniac is you know, it's one of those movies that I would have to, I could only show this to someone who I know can go ham, right?
Yeah.
Like that's the only, if you're like a newbie, this is not.
I feel like so, yes, you respect me like as a gore hound now, Julia, and I really appreciate that. I feel like this was like a graduation.
It was. You know, when I showed you Hellraiser, I thought I might break you, and you prevailed. And then I show you Maniac, and you're like tossing off like it's nothing. I love it.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it. I dig it so much. How would you survive? Would you survive this staying home, I guess?
I would not. I would not go out with that guy. No.
You would survive? Okay. Congratulations.
You know, because like creepy, I don't know. As a lady,
you love kind of like a little stuffy, so if he brought you like a cute little thing that you knew you liked, Lord. See, and you'd be like, oh, like if he got you like a little Mogwai, you know, a little like little gremlin stuff, you know, you're some cute little.
I've been on dates for boys that brought me stuff, and if I'm not into them still, I'm like sorry,
but it's a nice gift.
It is a nice gift. Don't live in sleazy 1980 New York City is kind of how you survive. So if you would like to talk to us about Maniac or any horror movie, you may on the internet, such as Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We are on Patreon. We are on Teespring. You can rate us. That would be awesome. Recommend whatever you like. What's your favorite gory movie? How do you feel about Maniac? Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We'll see you next time for more gore-tastic goodness.
Yeah.
Gooey.
Fantastic-orical disco citizens. This is our new thing.
Yeah, bye.
Thank you for listening. Horror Movie Survival Guide is independently produced by Terry Gamble, Julia Marchesi, and Sierra Ryan. Hey, that's me. If you would like to support the show, find us on patreon.com/horrormoviesurvivalguide.